This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is an opportunity for you to get your questions answered. And the way you get your questions sent to us, I'll reiterate, is via email. radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send your email. And for those of you not acquainted with our weekly Q&A with Layla, I partner routinely with Layla Mudin, who is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She's a registered dietitian, and she holds a master's degree in the field of nutrition. Say hello, Layla.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay. So, and you know, we also work together at the Hoffman Center, seeing patients together. Layla also has her own individual practice at the Hoffman Center. And we recently, very exciting news, we recently collaborated on something really new. It's very exciting. You know, we have been doing lectures at the Hoffman Center, mm-hmm. and some of you who are faithful listeners to our podcasts, you know that we frequently invite you to come to Midtown Manhattan to hear our lectures. So we get 50, 60, sometimes 70 people showing up, which is great, to fill up a lecture hall, small lecture hall at the nursing school that we share space with at, in our building here on 6th Avenue. And it's a great facility, and people come in. But a lot of people are saying, no way, no how can I come into Manhattan. I have a phobia about coming into Manhattan, or I live in Cleveland, or I'm listening, a faithful listener, but I'm in Florida, or, you know, we
that
have listeners all over the world. So people have said, why can't you video the lecture and make it available to people so we can partake of your knowledge? And finally, we've heeded the call, and we've done so. And we produced, I think, a great video. It's a really high-quality video.
Yes.
With really great quality.
I'm excited.
And it's on the subject of taming your addiction to food.
Yeah.
Now, the reason we started off with that theme is because this applies to virtually everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just for people who are desirous of losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
We see this is always a theme. That's why we insist that our patients, some of our patients say, well, I don't need to see the nutritionist. Yes, you do need to see the nutritionist.
Thank
because
you.
because we may recommend a special diet for you, a diet where you may be eliminating gluten or dairy. But then, you know, it's all easy. We'll hand you a sheet. So why do I need to talk to the nutritionist? It's pretty straightforward. Just here. Give me a list. I can go on the internet. I can find the gluten-free foods or the casein-free foods.
Mm-hmm.
But implementing the diet is the problem.
Right.
And whether it's, you know, heating or, you know, your resolve to restrict your caloric intake, avoid sugar, processed foods, whether it's to go on a special type of elimination diet, a paleo diet,
mm-hmm.
or a Mediterranean diet, it's always a matter of compliance. So we decided that this would be our initial video, and I think it's applicable to everyone, because we all are subject to bouts where our appetite takes control, and we're not mm-hmm. able to stop, even when we're full, to our detriment.
Yes.
And we have, clearly, there's a physiological basis for food addiction. And so we go into it in great depth. And without further ado, you should go to drhoffman.com. And we offer you a sample video for free. You can download it, and it'll give you some basic pointers.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is an encouragement to download the video at a nominal cost from our website, and see the entire video, and take back control
yes.
of your rampant appetite,
mm-hmm.
and use the practical tips that we outline there so that you can adhere to a healthy program. And we're not necessarily just talking about weight loss, although you will lose weight if you adhere to a proper
right.
diet.
We're talking about food cravings that have gone out of control. Even if you've never had food cravings before, even if you never had trouble stopping eating before, but you continue even after you're full, we're not just talking about overindulgence like at Thanksgiving. We're talking about chronic overindulgence. We're talking about food addiction. So we uncover for you in this webinar all the tricks of the trade, what's going on, and that knowledge is power, and how, on a physiological, biochemical basis, why this is occurring, why you're feeling that craving, why you're feeding that craving, and what you could do to stop all the madness. Defensive eating is the concept.
So go to DearHoffman.com and download the video. Take a look at the sample video. It'll be prominently displayed on our homepage. And check it out, and you know, use it, recommend it to your friends, your colleagues, family members, because I think it's a very, very useful primer if you want to get healthy, because diet is really the cornerstone of optimal health. So without introduction, what's in the news this week?
What's in the news this week? Not too much. It's been a fairly quiet summer.
Well, you know, I have to say, there's an interesting article that I'm going to talk about a little bit on the radio show this weekend, which is a new reason to be concerned about statins.
Oh.
Because we know that statins can cause problems. They can cause muscle aches, but it's only a relatively small percentage of individuals. But a lot of individuals, if it's even 3 or 5%, but it's a bothersome problem. But other people don't have that problem. Mm-hmm. Some people report fatigue. Some people report mild to moderate depression, sleep problems.
Diabetes.
There can be diabetes, which is really a high.
Especially in women.
Especially women.
That's like, very troubling.
Mind-blowing. 30% in one study, 50% in another. Mm-hmm. Not that 50% of the people get diabetes, but you have a 30 to 50% higher risk of becoming diabetic. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. It's not like half the people taking statins become diabetic. But relative to someone not taking a statin, you have a 30 to 50% mm-hmm. higher risk. So the new concern, and I was quite surprised by this because I didn't know this, is that it appears that one of the ways that statins exert their beneficial effects, mm-hmm. but also their harmful effects, is they inhibit stem cells. Now, stem cells may be responsible for the proliferation of plaque in the arteries. Uh-huh. So this is actually why statins may protect some people from the rapid progression of cardiovascular disease. These are people who really are at high risk, or they've had, you know, people who've had stents, it irritates the arteries and they have a higher risk of getting blockage. So they probably, you know, they might be good candidates for being on statins. I can't get in the way of that. People who've had bypass, they've already demonstrated a high propensity to cardiovascular disease, plus the new grafts clog up very quickly. And this is called restenosis. Restenosis, like, you know, very happens much. It may take 50 years or 60 years to get the blockage in the first place, but then within 3 to 5 years, your brand new arteries that are opened up can be closed by plaque. So, okay, statins do that. But in so doing, in inhibiting the stem cells, they also may inhibit some of the body's natural repair processes, because there's so much talk these days about stem cells, you know, like stem cells for the joints, and you know, like some people are advertising, come to my office and get stem cell therapy to, you know, to heal any manner of disorder, because the stem cells are what are called pluripotent. They're they have the ability to go to where they need to go and act as progenitor cells for whatever needs to be regenerated or repaired. And so one of the bad effects of statins may be to inhibit the stem cells. And so it's a risk-benefit equation. If you have high risk of heart disease, you might get more benefit than the downside of the stem cell inhibition. Yeah. But if you really have low risk and the doctor says, well, your cholesterol is a little high, you might as well take a statin. I'm taking a statin. My wife is taking a statin. Everybody that I can get on statins, they're the next best thing to mom's apple pie, you know, that mentality. Maybe we're not extending a benefit to people.
Yeah.
And we're putting them at risk, and even if they're asymptomatic, you know, if they don't have complaint of horrible muscle pain, or if they don't have liver enzymes that go up, which indicates damage to the liver, they still may have long-term harm from statins. So it was a thought-provoking article. I put it up on Facebook and Twitter. So those of you who follow me on Twitter and Facebook, you've seen it already, but I'll talk about it this weekend on the program.
Wow. That really is news. Okay.
So We have questions.
Yes.
We have some interesting ones this week.
We do. Actually, this one comes from Johnny. Good morning, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, how, you know, it's the afternoon when
it's the
recording.
Afternoon. I know, yep. But this email must have come, it came in the morning.
Right.
Diabetics are maldigestive, they lack healthy intestinal flora, encouraging fungi overgrowth. As a result, I reason that bypassing the metabolic processes of taking oral administered protocols for diabetes should be bypassed and given intravenous N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, and vitamin D.
I think he's overthinking it. He's overthinking it, you know, because, yes, diabetics may have worsened digestion, you know, theoretically anyway. They may have candida or they may have, you know, abnormal intestinal flora. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, I use a lot of intravenous treatment, but you know, Layla, that I really try to keep patient expenses down and to reduce the inconvenience of coming in for IV therapies when I can just give people oral supplements and they'll do.
Yes.
So it's only in patients who really have problems with absorption or serious health problems that we have to give them intravenous.
Right.
I mean, if somebody is very, very
patriotic. Crohn's, colitis, something like
Crohn's,
that.
Crohn's, colitis, or we had like a pregnant lady, she can't eat anything because she has you know, such nausea of pregnancy and ulcerative colitis, and her nutrition was so compromised that we had to give her some intravenous nutrition to protect the fetus. So yeah, that was a case. We've seen a couple of cases of that. And you know, or people with chronic fatigue syndrome or cancer, they need, you know, the IV vitamin C is much more potent than oral vitamin C. These are cases where we're going to use that. You know, so I that's a very wonky and theoretical question, and thanks for thanks for your thoughtful hypothesis, but it remains as such that, our diabetics can, look, we have great success with diabetics, even type 1 diabetics. I mean, we just saw a guy, I think you know who we're talking about.
Yes.
Who we've been treating him for like 20 or 25 years. And he hasn't lost all sensation in his feet. He hasn't had serious eye problems. He's had some heart problems, but the heart problems arose before we saw him. And he's healthy, and he's going to be 70, and he's had diabetes since he was, 10 or 11. And I really think that the great nutrition, your advice about diet and then the supplements we're giving him orally are doing him a lot of good to protect him from the consequences of type 1 diabetes, where he has to inject insulin every day.
Right.
And you know the lifespan of type 1 diabetics is statistically curtailed. Mm-hmm. Because they have a lot of trouble keeping their blood sugar under control.
That's true.
And there are going to be consequences. So.
Yeah. But the thing about type 1 diabetics is they also, when they come see us, they realize that by still keeping the carbohydrates low, they're able to administer less insulin.
Right.
Which is better because too much insulin is inflammatory.
Yeah. And it does so many bad things to the body.
Does.
And that's the basis of type 2 diabetes, is some of the damage is done not by the blood sugar, but by the high insulin levels.
Right.
Insulin resistance causes high insulin, and insulin may have harmful effects long term.
And by the way, for those people who don't know, type 2 diabetes is reversible. Unless you're late-stage diabetic where you have to administer insulin, that's different. But type 2 diabetes, for the most part, can be reversible. We've done it. We do it here every day. And it's very exciting.
You know what's so interesting is that I'm seeing in medical journals like case reports of people with type 2 diabetes, and they put them on a diet, and they get them to exercise, and their diabetes goes away.
It goes away.
And they put this in a medical journal as like a study, And it's like, you worked at Atkins. That was a day-to-day miracle. How many diabetics did you get off medication?
Yeah. And the only thing I could say to myself was, why isn't this common knowledge? That would drive me nuts.
Well, I don't know.
So it's becoming more and more.
It's going to take a few more years of medical journal articles. But, frankly, there are many people. I think the answer to that one is many people just want to take a pill.
That's true.
And doctors don't encourage them enough, and doctors are very excited about the medications that are available, and they want to apply their trade with the medications.
Yeah, or the doctors tell them, and I hear this over and over, you need this kind of a diet or that kind of diet, and end of story, no other direction, no referral to a nutritionist.
They don't have you in their office, in short. They just say, look, you need to lose weight. You go lose weight.
Lose weight.
Lose weight. Well,
how do I do that?
Look it up. It's on the internet. But you know, without a custom tailored diet and advice, I mean, it's like getting developing a championship football player, baseball player, or basketball player without coaching. It's like, hey, you know, these people are talented, but they need coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can take a average hitter and turn him into a slugger if you give him the right, hitting coach.
The other thing is, going to the internet, you have to vet your sources, and not everybody's going to know how to do that. I had a new patient come into me the other day with a case of ulcer, and she went to the internet and found the completely wrong diet to be taking.
Oh, boy.
She went on a very alkalinizing diet, which included lots of lemon water.
Oh.
What do you think that did to her? Wait a minute. You needed to come consult with a nutritionist.
Right.
So we've got her on the right path.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. But these are the things that can happen when you self-treat this way or just rely on the internet, go find a diet, go print it out. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like picking stocks or something, you know. I'm not any good at it, but
you gotta go with index funds that covers the entire market. Why bet on a horse when you could bet on the
But what's
horse racing?
What's the index
business?
Fund for a diet?
Just
said everybody to go on a Mediterranean diet or the salad and salmon diet. That's our index fund of It's okay for the vast majority of people, but if you want real specific, you can't go wrong mostly with a salad and salmon diet or a quasi Mediterranean diet. But it needs to be tweaked and
it needs to be modified per individual biochemistry.
Right.
Yeah, Johnny, thank you for your question. All right. This comes from Liz. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Listen to you all the time. Thank you both for your dedication. My very healthy 74-year-old mother, no medications, started having healthy burping. An endoscopy...
Healthy burping.
No, painful burping.
Oh,
I'm reading ahead. And
no, because I'll sometimes have soda water. And I'll have to,
Healthy burp.
That's a healthy burp. But, you didn't hear that. That's too much information, I think, for this.
Anyway, an endoscopy found reflux and grade A esophagitis.
Grade A, okay.
Yeah. So her
I don't know how that goes. Grade A is probably like the lowest degree, in my opinion. I'm not sure it's the worst.
Yeah.
But
they want her on Protonix for 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're both avid listeners of your show, we're not sure this is the best thing to do. Your thoughts, please.
Okay, so this is getting into the realm of medical advice, and I have to say, although Protonix is... got some bad side effects. It's a proton pump inhibitor. It can deplete your magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
That can be harmful in an elderly person. It can change your microbiome.
Yes.
It's really not great, and also can cause osteoporosis. So long-term use would not be good, and there's a tendency once you're on it to be hard to get off.
Yeah.
But that being said, without expert nutritional consultation, what are you going to do? If this were a patient under my care, I might say, look, try this special diet, under your supervision, Layla, and use products like DGL and Endofin. By the way, they're available at drhoffman.com. Endofin is great for GERD.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our patients with esophagitis do well with that. But there might be some hidden factor, like this is an older person who takes lots of Advil for pain or, Aleve, and that could make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know what's going on here. So I'd say when you are elderly and you have bad GERD, it can be very consequential. You could start to reduce your food intake. You can become weak and debilitated.
Yes.
And it needs to be taken care of. So I'm not going to get in the way of that recommendation unless I were to see that person myself and we're in constant contact, like, how are you doing, how are you doing? And sometimes I see patients where their ulcer or their GERD is so bad that we say, okay, fine, you need a medication for a while. We're going to get you off as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Liz, best of luck. Bring your mother for a consult. Okay. We've got a question.
By the way, that's a person who could, see you.
Yes.
And not even go through the whole medical process.
I could get them on the proper diet, the proper supplements.
Because,
sure.
I mean, there's two pathways here at the Hoffman Center. One is to see both of us, and people want to see me for sometimes very challenging medical problems. And, and then they also get a chance to see you. But sometimes people have been properly diagnosed, and we know exactly what's going on. They just need the nutritional perspective, so a more economical pathway. And they can even do this by phone if they're calling from, say...
Cleveland.
Cleveland.
New Jersey.
We're singling out Cleveland for abuse for some reason.
Florida.
yeah. But you know, this is a pathway to get nutritional advice.
Yeah.
If you're getting already proper medical support. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, we have time for another question in this segment.
Yes. This next one comes over the email. I don't have a name here, but the question is, why would eating fish increase diabetes risk? Uh-oh. And the person says, I'm no vegan, but can you explain if there's any validity to this?
And what prompted that question? Was there a story?
There was some research by Dr. Michael Greger.
Okay.
And he is known to be vegan.
Oh, I see.
So,
that I tell you what, there is a little bit of an agenda. There's sometimes agenda-driven. See, I sometimes will see a tract against fish,
mm-hmm.
and it's very important, I think, to see where that's coming from, because the devil can quote scripture to his or her advantage. I'm not saying vegans
that's
are
true.
Devils, but I'm just saying that he's coming from a preconceived notion. Now, there probably are some studies that suggest, and you're going to share them with us,
yes.
that suggest that adding fish to the diet makes you more likely to become
exactly.
diabetic.
Exactly. What he's found is that fish intake may increase type 2 diabetes risk by increasing blood sugar levels, as was shown by a review that's on PubMed of the evidence commissioned by the U.S. government. The review found that blood sugars increase by diabetics given fish oil. Another possible cause is that omega-3s cause oxidative stress, and here's where that whole headline is misleading, or it may not be related to omega-3s at all, but rather the environmental contaminants that build up in the fish.
Right.
And I'd say if anything is going to cause anything, it would be the contaminants, especially in something that would otherwise be so good for us as seafood, as long as it's clean. There are a lot of persistent organic pollutants, POPs, that are found that don't leave the environment, and fish are, you know, they accumulate this, and especially the longer-living fish, for instance, swordfish, tuna, and so forth.
I'll also tell you that there are many studies that show that, you know, since the main reason that people with diabetes get sick and have problems and die is because of heart disease,
mm-hmm.
that because of the heart protective effects of fish oil, that fish oil is generally recommended for people with diabetes.
Yes.
And in fact, the American Diabetes Association and the American Heart Association advocate eating fatty fish as a safe and effective way to obtain the heart health benefits of omega-3s.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not coming out in the Diabetes Association, not coming out against fish.
Right.
In the light of this study.
Yeah. Neither is the Mayo Clinic.
And, you know, I also will quote for you a study that I have. Is that in your pile there? The one page that I copied? I think it's...
I don't think so.
Did it get shuffled? Anyway, it was a study that came out that showed that diabetics mm-hmm. who consumed fish and fish oil had improvement in cardiovascular risk, and they did not have any change in their blood sugar. So
yes.
I think I copied that somewhere. So,
yes.
You know, I think this is an issue where there are some studies that suggest that taking fish oil or eating fish may be associated with a deterioration of blood sugar, but there are equal number of studies that show that it actually helps reduce insulin resistance,
right.
particularly type 2 diabetics.
Mm-hmm.
And I always prescribe fish oil for our diabetics.
Yes.
And it hasn't created a problem. I think one thing that you could say is, let's say you have a type 1 diabetic who's on a very, you know, calorie-controlled diet. Maybe they're on a, you know, like a 1,800-calorie diet.
Mm-hmm.
And they take a lot of fish oil pills. Well, let's do the math. They take 6 fish oil pills. Well, there's 9 calories per gram.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times 6 is 54. They may add like 50 additional calories to their program. And that... the caloric effect of the fish oil may influence their blood sugar if they're not compensating with the change in their insulin.
Take a longer walk, 54 calories.
Exactly. I would say, you know, what is that equivalent to? What food intake has 50 calories? Like half an apple?
I would say an apple has about 50 to 60 calories.
Okay, an apple or
like
a small handful of nuts or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that is such a consequential
A third
problem.
Of an ounce of nuts, sure. That's about it.
Yeah.
An egg is 78 calories or so.
But, you know, you did point out something interesting, which is that there's a little bit of an ideological agenda there of this person wants people to eat vegan.
Yes.
And what do you think of the vegan diet for diabetics?
Oh, I think it would cause diabetics, or it cause diabetes, or it would certainly exacerbate diabetes in somebody who already has it, because it's so high carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just eat
vegetables and
fruit.
It's hard to achieve a very low-carb vegan diet.
Yeah, very, very difficult. You'll start wasting away.
You would eat beans and tofu, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's they would sort of limit your options.
It's very, very limited. I don't think that's particularly healthy. And protein needs would be higher. You know, you see vegans, but you don't see a lot of lean, defined muscle mass on a vegan. I'm not talking about somebody who even works out,
mm-hmm.
but that muscle is getting eaten up because
mm-hmm.
the body needs protein. And you're basically eating yourself for dinner if you're not getting enough protein.
You mean if you eat lots of chia seed, you don't get like huge muscles?
No, well, plant proteins, while wonderful, and you could do a lot of combining, and certainly soy would be the only complete protein. But how much soy do you want to rely on? And so much of it is GMO at this point.
Yeah.
And it's so kind of estrogenic as well. If you have prostate cancer, eat all the soy you want, I suppose. That's fine. But if you have low testosterone, no, don't eat all this soy. But
one advantage, I think, of a vegan or high vegetable content diet. I mean, we're not against a high vegetable
diet.
We
should all be on a high vegetable diet, but that doesn't constitute a vegan diet.
If you had kidney disease, maybe restricting protein might be somewhat beneficial. Although if you restrict protein too much, you're going to get too many carbs, and you're going to get diabetes, which will mess up your kidney function.
Yeah. I have a patient who right now is trying to stay away from dialysis, and he's getting awfully close, and I have him on a nearly vegan diet.
Okay.
For that reason,
okay.
Because we have to watch it as creatinine keeps going up.
And many diabetics got there.
Yeah.
Many kidney failure patients got there due to their diabetes, sometimes combined with hypertension.
Exactly.
All right, but again, fish, not a no-no if you have diabetes. I would encourage fatty fish and fish oil supplements, generally beneficial. All right, that's all the time we have for part one of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. We advise our listeners to please turn to part two, wherein we will answer what questions, what's coming up?
Do beets increase arginine?
Oh, okay, we'll talk about the nitric oxide connection and beets when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla on Intelligent Medicine.